This week's episode has been brought to you by the new paid subscribership of Douglas. Thanks, Doug, and enjoy the episode. It's yours. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast, episode number 72. Very excited. Here we have Mr. Tom Hewitt, who is of the infamous email Tom, which I'm just now thinking as I'm saying that out loud. Is that weird that you're known as like the email Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. You know, I wrote that email just thinking, you know, I'll let these people know stuff. And it became a little bit of a sensation.
It did.
In that everyone started talking about it. I had some friends listen to the podcast and they're like, ooh, are you sorry you wrote that now? And not at all.
Oh, okay, good. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, clearly.
No, not at all. It's, you know, it's fodder for the machine.
Well, for anybody who is not aware, like say you're just now finding this podcast or whatever, Tom also listens to my good friends over at Naptime Radio, and you had a horrible thing happen where your house was destroyed by Hurricane Sandy, and so you decided that you were just going to knuckle down, and I'm going to redo all the construction work and everything myself, and you had this very kind email that you sent to us saying that during this reconstruction period, I listened to your podcasts and it really helped keep me going. It was very nice, a very, very kind thing. And so that's why I thought it would be fun to kind of, because what I read out of it, and anybody who's listened to the show a long time, I talked to about it with my own dad there. For me, it was like you've kind of become a hero of mine, if that makes any sense, or isn't weird for me to say this to you via Skype, but the idea of you just going, you know what, here's what I'm going to do. Not many of us have the balls to just say, I'm just going to take this on and I'm going to do it myself. It's probably going to suck and it's going to be really, really hard, but I'm going to do it anyway because I think I'm going to come out of this on the other side a better person. So I don't know. And what I wanted to ask you about this while I'm sitting here babbling is, do you have any kind of construction contracting background at all?
Well, not really. I'm definitely a do-it-yourself for a fair amount, and I do build boats. And they're just small boats. I don't know if you've ever been on the Jersey Shore, but there's a lifeguard boat that all the lifeguards up and down the coast use, and I build those, and I also do boat repair. So I tend to think if I can pick up a tool and figure out how to measure something, I'll Google it if I don't know how, or I'll just ask anybody that I can. So what happened was, you know, the money wasn't coming through, and you made the comment when you read my letter about, you know, was my wife sitting there with a chihuahua saying, you know, get this thing done. And it was almost that case. You know, it was a horrible thing. And, you know, like anybody else is going to have a meltdown. She just had a meltdown and looked at me and screamed, get me back in this house. And there was no money coming in from the insurance company yet. Everybody's still in this struggle to even figure out what happened to their house. And I just said, well, you know what? I'm just going to start working. And half the job at the first point was getting everything ripped out. So once you're there, then you're making your plans as you go and you start seeing what can be done and what should be done. And I just went at it bit by bit and made some mistakes where I would have done things maybe once instead of 72 times. But at the same time, you know, there was nothing else to do but do it. And there weren't a lot of construction people that were free to help.
Yeah.
So it was go as you go.
Well, let's go back. Because I think it's a really, really I don't know what it's like to be on your end of this. I mean, I know that as a person who, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it, entertains people for a living, I have friends tell me things that, you know, like people are interested in what you have to say. And even though I understand that it's how I make my living, it's still weird for me to think of it. But is it weird for you to think that you have an interesting story, or do you kind of look at it and go, yeah, I get it?
Well, I think it's only interesting in so far as everybody here probably has an interesting story in terms of the storm and how they dealt with their house and what's happening. You know, the news reports here are all about how people are just still going through a nightmare.
Oh, really? Still to this day?
I'm sorry.
Still to this day, there are people still, it's on the news. It's like, you know, people are still trying to get their houses back and get them back in shape even now.
Yeah, there are five houses within a three-block radius of me that are still empty, and people are still trying to figure out what to do with them and how to deal with them.
Wow. So let's go back to when the storm hits, if you don't mind. I want to go through the whole story. So did you and your family, like, evacuate and then go find some – did you go stay with family, or what did you do?
Well, I wouldn't stay with my folks. They were on this – they are on this island. My mother just had a lung replacement – or actually a lung removal – because of lung cancer, and my stepfather did not want to move her. And so they're on the highest point of the island that I'm on, so we went and stayed there. And it was pretty low-level winds until the eye came through, and then after the eye came through is when the winds started hitting and things got a little bit crazy here. But more than anything, it was the tides. In the morning, we had a tide that came up to a certain level, and I said to my stepfather, you know what? I got to go back to the house and bring things higher. And a 70-year-old guy, he went over with me. It makes me think a lot about how you and your father operate together. We waded through the water almost up to our waist, and we came back into the house, and it was just fire sale. I threw everything on top of everything. We put things as high as they could go, saved what we could, and then just left. And when the next tide came, we just said, let's hope for the best. Wow. So a lot of the things I had up pretty high. You know, we had a foot and change of water through the whole house. It's just a rancher. So you can imagine the whole thing being just one big soaking sponge when we got back. And it just had to be ripped apart after that.
So, and how high did the water level actually come in your house?
That's what I said. It was a foot and change.
Foot and change. I'm sorry.
You know, we have some lower portions of the house that step down to the level, and in there it was about 4 feet high. You know, our house is maybe three steps up. But the whole thing, you know, there were things that were in my son's room that had floated into the kitchen. It was something else.
The thing, like what you're saying, I'm trying to wrap my mind around it, is that, so you're saying that while a foot and some change may not seem like a lot, but when we're talking about things like sheetrock and stuff like that, that it actually, like a sponge, will absorb it and it moves up and ruins more than just that lower. It's not like you had to go down and cut things out 18 inches and then replace it. Walls have to come down.
And that's what they say to do. They say just to go to 4 feet high so that you can just put new sheetrock in. But we have plaster. We had plaster and lath walls. So you take the plaster off at 4 feet high and you still have, you know, some of the wall came out an inch and change away from the wood beams. And it wasn't ever going to match up. So I actually had to go all the way to the ceiling. And once I went to the ceiling in some rooms, the ceiling caved in. And then we found places where there was old rot that had nothing to do with the storm. And almost every window that we exposed was just rotted through and needed replacing. It was just one thing after another where it's just like, this is just getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, any weekend warrior who, especially if you own an older home, like our house was built in 41, you start to go, oh, well, I'm just going to do this. And then as soon as you start doing that, you realize, oh, well, now there's something wrong with this that I have to replace before I seal it all back up. Only in your case, it's the entire freaking house.
It was the entire freaking house.
Wow.
And then once we're there, of course, my wife is like, well, wouldn't it be nice if we did this? And wouldn't it be nice if we did that? So I ended up tearing out walls and putting up beams and, you know, because, hey, you know, it's practically gutted. So,
No. I hope I'm not. It's just funny. Like, here's the thing. I'm not laughing at your wife. And if she listens to the show, I really am not trying to get you in any kind of trouble. But I think that as husbands and fathers, we can all relate where it's a very wifely thing to do where it's like, well, you've got all the walls down. Well, why not make that breakfast nook? You know
what I mean? Right. Exactly.
Which it makes sense. It makes perfect sense, but like to me it's laughable because it's definitely relatable except for the fact of the storm, but just in the context of the storm and the house being destroyed and all that stuff, it's like, well, if we're gonna do it, like, just that vibe is funny to me, right? Like
right. But we were under a deadline. You know, you talk about in-laws.
Yeah.
My in-laws do not listen to this podcast, and I hope they never do. Otherwise, I'll have to be Juan Lancini, Paco's brother. my brother-in-law has a house, a duplex that he rents out in the summer only, and he had us stay there for the winter. Only it's usually empty through the winter. Only he charged us rent. And I won't say the monetary amount, but it made me feel like you really hate your sister, don't you?
Yeah.
So we were there
because I understand correctly. It's not like he would normally be rent. It's not like you were costing him money because it's like a vacation home where people go to like the Jersey Shore. They go for the summer.
Exactly.
Yes? Yeah.
Right. And you rent it for a pretty big nugget in the summer, and then you don't have to worry about it through the winter.
Yeah, pays for the whole year.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're there and paying rent, and then he calls in, I guess it was, you know, late April, and says, hey, you know, the people wanted to come a month early because the weather's kind of nice. That's okay with you guys. You're almost back in the house, right?
Wow.
And it was not the case at all. And I said, well, no, it's not all right because we're nowhere near. And he said, well, they're really nice people. I don't want to upset them.
In-laws are the best.
Your nephew and your sister are homeless. You wouldn't want to upset them, would you?
Yeah.
And so then it was, you know, a full-on assault. It was crazy. It was almost sleepless days and sleepless nights just getting things done. You know, and our big thing and my big thing the whole time was, you know, while my son is going to have to understand that there's times where I'm going to be gone, I didn't want him afraid of the house, afraid of the storm, you know, and just thinking that this storm just took his dad away. Cause if I'm not the primary caregiver, I am the primary dealer, you know, in that I'm the go-to guy.
Yeah.
And, if I'm gone all the time, he just is going to be. Wait a minute. Things are really weird and shaky.
How old is your son?
He's four.
Four. Okay. And what's that like? And I hope I'm not prying too much, but I'm just very curious. What's that like trying to calm down a four-year-old when there's these hellacious winds and storms going on in a house and your only alternative is to, you know, stay with your mom and pops at a higher place. Is he scared or were you able to keep him calm?
He was okay. You know, when the second tide came, it came close to my folks' house. It didn't come in at all, but it came close and he was already asleep. And luckily the worst parts of it came through the night. So it was just, it just sounded windy to him. Okay. It wasn't a big terror. If you follow the geography of the storm at all, the eye passed over us at probably 9:30 or so at night. I forget exactly what time it was. And that was also the peak high tide. And that saved us a lot because as soon as the eye went over, the wind switched and started pushing things back out to sea.
Oh.
So the tide that was a peak high, if the wind hadn't done that, hadn't made that switch, it really would have come up and probably even gotten my folks' house. So we were pretty lucky there. But I'm also, you know, I surf a lot, so I'm a bit of an amateur meteorologist and had a pretty good idea that we were going to be in that range, you know, and kind of we hedged our bets that way. We had a generator, you know. The one thing I say to everyone about the storm, I coach rowing too, and we had our last race of the fall before the storm, and I said to the rowers, the one thing you need to do with this thing coming is decide what you're going to do and do that right away, but just make sure that that's something that's going to cover everything you need. Yeah. So we had food, generators, the gas for the generator. We were covered in every way that we could possibly imagine, which was good because the power was out for a good week and change here in town, and they didn't even let people back on the island for a week and a half. So it was good to be here because we got a big jump on taking care of the house and letting other people off the island know what was going on, how their houses were. You know, it was almost under martial law here.
Wow.
Crazy.
East Coast people are so much more tough than West Coast people. Like I'm hearing you talk about all this stuff and how, you know, generators and people are making, you know, plans. And I don't know that I know that Kimmel plays it a lot on his show as a joke. But if we get any kind of rain in Los Angeles, they act like it's a hurricane. Like there are guys like, I could feel water on my face where I am right now. Like they're talking about it like it's going to be so miserable. It's going to be 68 degrees and raining, guys. Everybody bundle up and try, you know, like get your supplies in order. Be safe out there on the roads. And every time I see it, I go, if people in Wisconsin or someplace with real weather heard them talking, they would hate us so much. Like,
right. It's true. You know, I grew up out here, and I actually coached out and coached rowing out at Santa Barbara for UC Santa Barbara, and they would get snow on the pass over towards their lake. And I used to drive up there, and there would be a cop car telling everyone to turn around. I was like, "It's a dusting. It doesn't. Yeah. It's not even real snow."
Yeah.
It's like, "Oh, the roads are impassable." I was like, "Impassable? Can what do people do when they go to Tahoe if they can't go on this dust thing?" He said, "Well, people around here are from Santa Barbara. They're not ready for this."
They do that all the time. The Grapevine is infamous that if any kind of snow hits or it gets too cold, they shut essentially the main thoroughfare.
You dropped out.
Oh, okay. What I was saying is on the Grapevine is what it's called. It's the Interstate 5 in California that connects like the Central Valley to the Los Angeles Basin. Anytime it gets cold enough and any snow shows up, they shut that whole freeway down. Because otherwise, like, they think semis are just going to start drifting down the hill and sliding all over the place. And so there's no way other than the 101, right. There's no way in and out of Southern California if it gets cold enough there for that to happen. It's
right.
Insane. Insanity. But the other – so then you go
You're
there.
All soft.
Yeah. So you go there. You know, the storm passes over. Is it – because it sounds like to me it was like a few days. And I'm sorry for my ignorance about this. But – or was it just like one really bad night? Or did it take 2 or 3 days for the whole storm to hit?
Well, it builds up. It starts coming at you. It was maybe a day and a half of storm.
Okay.
The winds would start, and like I said, until the eye came, the wind was 15 miles an hour. So you would just think it was just a windy day. And then when that eye came and it passed, and the wind started picking up on the other side of it because the hurricane whips around that certain way. Then it started feeling more nasty. Now, you know, 50 miles north of us, there were, you know, buildings destroyed, disappeared, washed away, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we weren't in the absolute worst part of that storm, but at the same time, it's, you know, it was, like I said, the tides were more than anything the problem. The water just came in, and, you know, once your house is a bathtub, there's not much you can do about it.
Right, yeah. So then the storm passes, and then you have some kind of like assessing the damage. I'm sure you go there to try and figure out, you know, how bad it is.
Yeah, and you know, like one of the things I did, you Google everything these days. I Googled it, and everyone just says you just start ripping everything out because it's the moisture in the house that's going to create the mold. And once you have the mold, then you need mold remediation and all that fun stuff. So, you know, the first thing we did was get everything that was wet out of the house, then everything that was dry out of storage. All the appliances have to be in the backyard so the insurance assessor can come, and you don't want anyone coming and stealing all the copper out of your house. It's, you know, it's almost like you're half going into survival mode, half protect your house mode, and then construction demolition at the same time, because you don't want to demolish anything you just don't necessarily need to. And at the same time, you have to hold on to everything because the insurance adjuster is going to come and try to lowball you and give you about $5 on your, you know, $200,000. House.
Wow.
Saying, well, good luck with that.
And so in your case, like you were describing, is that the insurance companies are in a sense flooded with all of the claims and everything. So it's not like in 48 hours you're going to get a check that's going to offset the expense of everything you're about to do to repair the house.
Right. And we have, and our insurance company was actually pretty good. You'll hear nightmares about insurance companies. They're pretty good, but we have a mortgage company as well, which will remain nameless. And the mortgage company name was on all of our checks. So they had to endorse the check, and they say, well, you send that to us. And when you have 50% of the work done, we'll send you 30% of the money.
What?
Which means, yeah, exactly. I was like, you guys are the bankers. You deal with percentages. I don't know how you don't see that doesn't add up. They're thieves. And a friend of mine who is a banker said, we'll figure it out. How many homes that this company deals with were damaged this way? It's millions of dollars in interest that they're getting on money that has nothing to do with them. It's just free money in the thing. And they say, well, anything extra goes into escrow, but they have a chunk of change there that is just building money for them. So they're happy to hold on to your money as long as possible. And then in Katrina, people ripped off the money. They would take the money and run and leave the mortgage company with an empty house that was just rotting to the ground. So because there were a few thieves down in Louisiana, now the system is changed so much that everyone is considered a thief. I was on the phone with a mortgage company guy for 8 hours. Wow. Trying to get him to bend and give us a little more money. And, you know, to the dad podcast, I finally said to him, are you a parent? And he was on his script. He said, well, we're going to do everything we can to help you, Mr. Hewitt. I said, no, are you a parent? Do you have any kids? Well, Mr. Hewitt, I understand your concern. I said, finally, listen, I just want to know that I'm talking to a human being. Are you a parent? And he said, well, yes. I said, imagine going home today and telling your child that the bank doesn't feel like you're honest enough to take care of the house and to fix it. And we're just not going to have the house for a good long time now, son or daughter. Wow. And he just stopped. He put me on hold for 20 minutes. He called me back and said, I'm going to get you a little bit more money as soon as I can. You know, you'll get some paperwork in the mail. It was mind blowing.
Yeah, that is, that's so, like, so I understand this part too. So because the bank holds the note, holds the mortgage on the house, the insurance company technically pays them because they're the one with that has the collateral. So what you're saying is when Katrina happened, the insurance companies would say they would cut Justin Worsham a check for 80 grand to do the repairs on the house. And then I would take the 80 grand and just blow out of town and leave them with a house and that's all tore up, that is upside down in its value.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Wow. And so now what has to happen is that the insurance. What were you saying? I'm sorry.
Just in a location where the price of the house has probably been cut in half.
Right. Because of all the damage.
That's where we are now.
Right.
Yeah. And it's an area that is flood prone now. So no one wants to buy here because, well, did you get flooded? Yes.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah. And so what now happens is the insurance companies cut the check to the mortgage company, and then they can decide how they want to do it. So the mortgage company is, in a sense, getting huge flows of cash from insurance companies that they can then turn, take that money and invest it into things that can make them some more money. And so the longer they can hold on to it and keep you at bay, the more financial profits they can gain from it. Yeah?
Exactly. Yes.
Wow. So then how much of the repairs and stuff did you end up having to do out of pocket?
Well, we did a good probably 60% out of it, 60% of it, before we finally finagled enough money from them to start putting the chunk of change that we got from them into it. And then once that happened, I had learned the lesson, and I realized, you know, I'm going to spend as much time working on the house as I am on the phone and doing all this paperwork. And I was just relentless. I was absolutely relentless. And when you get to a point where they say you're at 90% done, we'll release the rest of the money to you. I just made an appointment with a guy, and he got there and he said, well, it doesn't look exactly 90% done. And I said, well, we are, because we don't have any money. So I'm 100% done. And this is where it's going to stay unless you do it.
Yeah,
and, you know, by then we had been booted from the other place. So we were here, and we didn't have a kitchen. We were camping out.
Wow.
And he was like, okay, I get it. You're 90% done. I was like, that's right. I am.
Yeah.
And he signed off on it. You know, and the thing is, anytime you end up dealing with a human being, or you force them to be a human being, then people are willing to help you. Mm-hmm. But the big companies hiding behind themselves, not to get into business, but, you know, they would just love to keep your money and not help you and not worry about it and think you're a thief, it seems like.
And that's the thing. It's like it's so weird to hear this. I think anybody who hasn't had this kind of stuff happen to them, and, you know, like, I know that a long time ago we used to talk a lot about perspective on the show, and that, like, for me, it's hard because I haven't had really anything horrible happen to me. So it's mind-blowing that you can't just see the logic. If I'm a guy who's picking up the phone for, let's say, Wells Fargo as an example, and, you know, people just
bing,
had the
bing, 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 bing.
How did I know? that, you know, like, people had their homes decimated, and like, I could, like, to me, I feel like I would be more inclined to be a little bit tighter on the giving if it was just like a random guy, you know what I mean? Like, just calling in. But we're literally talking about an entire region, a coastline of a nation that has been destroyed, and people need help. And it's not even like handouts. It's why we have insurance. It's why we pay our mortgage every month, you know, like,
right.
It's
we did religiously, and, you know, we're happy to have a home.
Right. And it always seems that those people are the ones – that's the thing that I'm noticing more and more in life and why I like to have a fuck-off chambered a little bit easier. I've got a hair trigger on my fuck-off now that I feel like the people who are dicks, the people who are assholes – and I know that I'm jumping from business to talk about people, but it just seems to me that you start to see these examples of people that get away with shit that nobody should really get away with, and that if we were more inclined to say, hey, fuck off and knock it off, or in your case, a much nicer way of saying, listen, let's all be human beings. Like, do you have a kid? What would you like to tell your kid if this was, if you were in my shoes? What would you say? You know, put yourself, connect to me as a person. Stop reading a script. Because it's just mind-blowing to me that they could – you could just sit. I couldn't sleep at night if I was the guy picking up the phone and telling people, listen, I can only give you 30 grand right now. And I know that you're doing all the work on your own and everything. And I'm sure you're not even able to go to your job and work because you're too busy trying to build your house back again. It's like I couldn't sleep at night. I honest to God. And I'm not saying that makes me a better person. I'm sitting here listening to you going, it sounds unbelievable. It sounds Hollywood-esque, you know, that would happen, but obviously it did. It's crazy.
It's and I definitely have that fuck off meter pretty hair trigger as well. I get in trouble all the time. I was always like, you know what? You just can't say that to people when they're being like that. You know, like drivers around the neighborhood, yeah. All that kind of stuff. I'm the guy who will chase a car down and be like, you stop at that stop sign. So bitch.
I like everything about you,
Tom. Can't tolerate that little stuff that people do that makes a neighborhood just be a bunch of people saying, screw you, pal.
Right.
And, you know, it's when it gets on the corporate level, I'm the same way. But I found that if I have any animosity in my voice at all, it's almost like they're more than happy to say, see ya. Good day.
Yeah, exactly. So Were you able to work as well while you were doing this, or was it a thing where you had to cut your losses and say, well, we need the house more, so I'm just not going to be able to work right now. I just got to devote all my time to the house?
Yeah, I just cut my losses.
Wow.
We, you know, like I said, I build the boats. I do boat repair. I repair rowing shells. I coach rowing for the local college. It's just like a part-time gig. I did coach because that's a contract, and you know, it was just in the mornings between 6 and 9. So I did do that, but for you know, actual income, bringing in the bigger stuff that I tend to get, I just was like, you know what, we got to do this. Yeah. There's no other option. We can't sit with an empty house for too long, because you know, you stay home, you go broke. And the sooner we're in, the sooner things can get back to normal.
And does it make
a case of, I want to get my kid back in his house.
Yeah.
You know, we have a house, and, even though he was awesome with it, he's a really easygoing kid. I got really, I say, because I'm older, I got lucky. They gave me an easy one. But at the same time, I was seeing how things were starting to disrupt him a fair amount, and that, you know, he didn't want to go to the broken house, as he called it. He didn't want to stop by. And he's a kid who, well, you know, he'll come. He knows how to, he's 4 years old. He knows how to use a drill. You know, I have pictures up of him on my Facebook page where he's, you know, hammering siding on the walls. He's a kid who just like, he loves getting into it and he loves doing it. And he just couldn't come here. My wife didn't walk in the door for months and months and months. It was just too much for them to deal with. I used to pull up in the mornings and sit in the car for 5 minutes just with my head in my hands thinking, like, how am I going to even get through what I have to do today? Like, what nightmare am I going to find? And that's where you guys came in again and just saved my life, because I would be doing stuff and just laughing with you guys. I mean, some of the worst things I'd do, and I had my iPod, my earplugs in, and I'm just cracking up while I'm looking at something that should have me on the ground in tears, and often did. And like that one moment when you said that you sat there with your head in your hands and you were just like, I didn't want this. I didn't sign up for this. I kept coming back to that in my head again and again, because it's like, I didn't want this. I didn't sign up for this. But at the same time, this is where I am. And the only way that I'm going to get out of it is to keep going. So get moving now.
Yeah. I cannot, and that's what I want to get into. Well, first, let me ask you this question. How many months would you say, or weeks or whatever it was, would you say that you were doing the construction work on your house?
Well, I'm still not done. I mean, we're in, but it's harder when you're in, because, you know, it's, you're making dust and everybody's got to get out of here and I'm going to paint this or bang on that or whatever. But we're still not done. So, and my thing was, I didn't want to be working on this house a year later, and I am. It's making it pretty parts, but it's still, we're not done.
Do you at least have a kitchen now?
Yeah, we do have a kitchen. Yeah. Okay. That was the number one, get that in and done so that we can do that. You know, we just got a dining room table. I'm building a banquette so we can sit down. So we're kind of just sitting on a big piece of plywood up against the wall right now, for a dining room table. I have an electric gas, fireplace in that is, framed out with the stone, but we don't have the actual, outer frame and or a mantle. So it's just a big gas fireplace sitting in the middle, in the middle of the wall, sticking out.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't have any of the finish work around it or anything like that.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And, the big thing was let's get this done by Christmas. Yesterday was going to be a huge day of work, school calls, kid has an earache, off to the doctor, you know, one thing after another. Yeah. And you know how it is. You just don't get anything done when you have kids.
So, and I'm sorry again for my
schedule. I'm the go-to guy. You know, right. It's like, well, you know, I work for myself more or less. So when there's someone to be bailed out, I'm there.
So it sounds like you and I kind of have a similar, does your wife work? She has like a regular quote unquote full-time job. And then she's a teacher. Okay. Yeah. So then, and then you kind of do like off on like freelance type stuff. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so it's I can definitely relate to that, where and it's funny because now that both of my guys are in preschool, while it does not even compare to what you're going through, but I can at least on some level relate, where it's like just the idea of them both being there. Now that I've had them gone and I have 6 hours to myself, the idea of them being there, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to get anything done. Like, how can I
right.
How can I accomplish anything? Because it's always funny to me. Like, once you get used to, like, there were things I would do with them. And then the one I always think of is that first time I went to the grocery store without them and how it took me like 20 minutes. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? That was easy. That was so cake. And it's because I wasn't bending over to pick up pacifiers. I wasn't talking to them. I wasn't telling them to stop grabbing stuff. You know, like, it just, all these little tiny things just eat away at the time that it takes you. And the next thing you know, you're in the grocery store for 45 minutes and you're like, what the hell am I going to do with this day? So right. I couldn't even imagine trying to, in a sense, you know, renovate your entire home. And then you got a kid who comes home who's not just a kid, but a sick kid. Also,
right.
You know, that he needs some rest and some, and he's young enough to where he can't, you know, you can't just stick him in a bed and go, okay, dad's going to be downstairs hanging some sheetrock. You know, you got to.
Right. Good luck, kid.
Yeah, exactly.
There's, he didn't give a shout.
There's going to be some snuggling in front of Sprout, you know, or something for,
right.
for a little bit. You know, you're going to be enjoying some pajanimals at some point during that day. So,
we live near my folks and we live near my wife's folks. And there would be times where they would say, you know what, if you need to get work done on the house when he's sick, by all means, like, you know, we'll sit with him, whatever the case may be. And I came home one day and my father-in-law said, you know what, he was really good. He's still feeling a little bit low energy, but he was fantastic. You know, at one point I took my dog for a walk and he did what I told him. He just stayed on the couch the whole time. You know, I was only gone for like 25 minutes. And I was like, what? You were gone for I was like, never again. He just didn't count on it. I was like, how is that even remotely okay?
Yeah, that's
he was fine.
That's funny. 25
never
minutes
again.
You know, it's because I'll be honest, like, I have those moments where it's like, I wonder if I could just run and go do this real quick. I mean, the worst I've ever done, and I caught some flack from a friend's wife for this, where we used to live a block away from our mechanic. And so I put Jacob down for a nap. He was, I think, maybe one at the time. I got in the car. I drove it to the mechanic. It was literally like 50 feet from my front door. I drove the car. I said, here's the keys. I just need an oil change. I got to go back. And then I, you know, jogged back to the house. I was gone maybe, honest to God, 5 minutes tops. And the mom, when she found out that I did this, was like, what would you have done if the house caught on fire? And I go, to me, it just seems like, well, yeah.
I've seen it from 50 feet away.
Yeah, exactly. I go, well, horrible shit can happen all the time. But, like, why is it that that's where, and I get it, because as parents, I think we all have that kind of, like, triggered wiring where it's like, oh, we have to be on we got our head on a swivel kind of thing. But yeah. I just thought it was, so I jokingly said to her, I'm like, well, then it's a good thing I'm not in there. Otherwise, I would have died too. Like, because to me, it's just like, it's so silly. Like, it's, well, yeah, but I could be sitting there and the house could be struck by lightning. And then, you know what I mean? Like, lots of shit could go wrong, but it's funny to me. So I've had those kinds of thoughts, but even me can go 25 minutes. You're walking the dog and the kid's 4 years old by himself in the house. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like,
not working.
Yeah. Like, that's, and it's a weird thing, especially when they're your in-laws, because it's not like some guys are, I like to say, ballsy enough, but they'll sit down and say, hey, listen, you can't do that anymore. But at that point, is that really a conversation you want to have? Like, you know what I mean? And it's always going to make things weird and awkward. It's a weird thing when you're kind of relying on them to help out with some free childcare. And so, but you also have your own expectation of the way that it should be. Well, everyone listening to this agrees that a bare minimum is no longer than 2 minutes by themselves while you go out to the car or something to get something, not a 25-minute dog walk. But, right. But yeah, I could get the idea of, because like my mother-in-law constantly wants to watch our sons. Like, she's like, why can't I take them? Because my dad will take them for a week. And she's like, why can't they come stay with me for a week? Well, number one, because they had Natalie when they were almost 40, they're the same age as my grandparents. And so my father-in-law has had 3 strokes in the last 5, I think it's now 7 years, actually. Can barely walk around without a walker. My mother-in-law broke her wrist, and so one of her hands doesn't really work because she didn't rehab it correctly. And so it's like, well, you can't even open it. Like, you come to my house, you can't pour yourself a cup of coffee. How are you going to take care of 2 toddlers? Like,
we'd love to have you. First, we need to run you through the physical paces, though.
Yeah, okay? Exactly.
Running up the stairs with a 5-year-old on your back, yeah. Running out to the curb with a 3-year-old on your leg.
Yeah, it's like, and it's just funny to me because I know what they're saying. They're really just saying that we want to help out, but like, that's not, why can't you be realistic and just be like, yeah, well, I would love to help out, but I can't. Then that's a totally acceptable phrase. Like, I wish I could do more. And maybe it'll be easier when I'm in my 70s and I'll be able to say, oh, it really does suck to have the same youthful mind that I have now at 34, but I don't have the ability to do things. And maybe there's some level of embarrassment. I don't know, but I'm getting off point here. But the other thing.
It's the in-law game. You're on point. Yeah. It's the in-law game. I think that what happened when I and my wife announced that we were going to get married is my in-laws got together and had a little meeting, and they said, look, we're a pretty fucked up group, but we have to up the game because we got another one in the family, and we got to show this guy who's boss. And they made a game plan, because some of the stuff that you talk about that your in-laws do, I'm like, oh, God, it's the same exact thing.
Really?
And I've turned it into a game where I'm like, I have to outthink them 3 steps. I almost want to be like James Bond, where they show up thinking like, I'm really screwing things up for them now. And I'm like, no, I'm ready. Here, I got this for you. Here you are. Here, we're getting ready to go. Let's leave. You know, it's just everything is always a problem. And no matter how you plan it, they're like, oh, we're going to screw this up. Don't worry. We'll screw it up.
I'll share with you my latest adventure with my in-laws, and we can have a laugh over this. My, I think, 45-year-old sister-in-law recently sent my wife a text message while she was at work and says, hey, I'm going to be stranded at LAX at around 4 p.m. Can you come pick me up? I may need to stay with you for a couple days. And to which Natalie, this is the part that blows my mind, is that if for people that listen to the show know that, you know, Natalie and I, while I love her to death and she's the best thing to ever happen to me, we have lots of issues where it's like, I will say, hey, I could really use your help, or it would be make things easier if you did this. And she would always agree and say, yeah, you got it. And then do the exact opposite. And so when I have a 17-year history with this woman that I love dearly, of her not getting on board with what I'm asking her to do with me, even though she agrees. Like, again, it's not like I'm trying to talk her into a 3-way or some butt sex. I'm saying this is something that I would like us to get together on because it's going to make our lives better. And she's like, yep, you got it. And then does the exact opposite. That's the problem that I have. All it takes was for her sister to send her a text message saying, I'm going to be stuck at LAX and I need some help. And she's catapulted into action. I'm in Texas. She's calling me saying, I need to get a sitter for tonight so I could go pick up my sister. Isn't it crazy that I have to do this? And blah, 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 blah. She's leaving work during her breaks where she normally doesn't even leave her desk for breaks. She just works all the way through. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck is going on? These people have nothing to do with us unless they need something. We never fucking hear from them unless they need something. And here's what happened. She had called. This is another thing that I might be oversharing here, but she had called a few weeks prior to this event saying, hey, we got an event that we're doing in Pomona. Now, what they don't know, they're friends with an IndyCar owner, and I'm a racing fan. So what they don't know is that I know that the final race of the season was in Pomona and that's why they were coming down there. But so they just called it an event in, that they're going to in Pomona. They wanted to drop one of their kids off with my wife. Well, I was gone on the road, and she's like, I have to work, and Justin's gone. So that's a negative on that one, Ghost Rider. And so she's like, oh, because she's like, he's under new medication. I later found out that medication was Xanax. So if your child is on an antidepressant that is new and you want to go hobnob with wealthy people, like, maybe I'm not supposed to judge, but to me I'm like, I think I would be sitting next to my kid, you know, like he's 4 years old with an earache.
Surveillance for a while.
Yeah, maybe I'd be focusing on that. Maybe I'd be focusing on my depressed 10-year-old or whatever. Right. But that's just me, I guess.
Or take the kid along and see what kind of show you end up with.
Exactly.
Hey, stole the car. Get back here.
Oh, this guy, he's so wily. And what had happened was that she went to like a bachelorette party, and these people are very wealthy. And while she makes good money, I think they blow through it. They don't manage it very well. And so she hops on a private jet with them to go to New Orleans and then realizes that she's got to pay her own way back but doesn't have enough money. So she wants Natalie, even though this chick is 45 years old, she wants Natalie to get off work at 5:30. My wife, when I'm gone on the road now, the kids stay all day at preschool. So she gets off at 5:30, goes down, picks them up at like 5:45. Our kids go to bed at like 7:30, 8-ish. So she has an hour and a half to get them dinner fed, bathed, and in bed. And then the final hour to 2 hours, because she usually goes to bed about 9:30, 10, is her making the meal for the next day and getting lunches ready in the morning so she can get up, because she's doing it solo. She wants this chick to load up. And for anybody who doesn't live in Southern California, even though LAX is honestly 20 miles from my house in Burbank, it takes about an hour and 20 minutes to get there and then another 45 minutes to an hour to get back. So it's just mind-blowing to me that this chick couldn't find a way to take a cab. And I said, tell her to take a cab, because I knew that they should have had enough money. She goes, I have no money on me. And I said, well, tell her to take
public. Hey, when you get to the door.
Yeah, it's like, I said, well, then tell her that, you know, you can, I said, tell her to take public transportation. She's like, well, I don't know, blah, 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 blah. And so Natalie wants us to pay, we pay our sitter $17 an hour. So she wants to pay a sitter $17 an hour, even though it's only for 2 or 3 hours, so she could go down there. I'm like, so it's going to cost me $60 to $75 just so she could go pick up her sister and the kids can go to bed on time. And I'm like, no, this is bullshit. No. And so I sent a text message to my sister-in-law saying, listen, this is what Natalie's dealing with. She's trying to help you out. It would really be nice if you could figure out another way to get to my house, you know. And she goes, don't worry. I said, so if you could wave her off, that'd be great, because she's not listening to me. This is what my sister-in-law says. She goes, I called her off. Don't worry. I took care of her problem. And that just drove me up a wall, because I'm like, no, Natalie didn't have a problem until you showed up. That's when the problem happened.
I took care of her problem, me.
Yeah.
I took care of me. For a change.
And it gets better, because she stayed the next day, and then Natalie came home from work, and Natalie gets the kids home, and then she's got to take the dog on a walk. And so she takes the kids with her in the stroller right after dinner. So there's dishes all over the kitchen and then and the table and everything. Goes and takes the dog on a walk for like 45 minutes to an hour, comes back. My sister-in-law didn't even do the dishes. Didn't even like clean up, didn't do anything to help out. That morning she sent me a text message saying the wireless password isn't working. I have work I have to do. Can you fix it, or should I spend the day at Starbucks? And I was like, are you fucking... Don't you wish you had
afford to spend the day at Starbucks? You could have afforded to get a cab to our house.
Exactly. Don't you wish that you had those kind of balls, Tom? Don't you wish that you could just take advantage of people like that and be that self-centered?
Absolutely. That it's like, I was... But you know what? It sounds like your in-laws had the same meeting. They really screwed up.
They did.
But this Justin guy, we got to be even better.
They did. Only here's my story is that I met them when I was 17 years old. So I kind of was a kid trying to impress them, and I was blind to what was going on until there was I was fixing everything at their house for them when I was a kid, trying to show them that I was a good man and deserving of their daughter, and because my father-in-law used to work on the road a lot as a carpenter. He would go and spend like months in Georgia doing a construction project and stuff, and so I thought I was doing this great thing, and then her car broke down because she didn't take care of it. And my dad was going to junk his car, and so I said, well, we'll swap it out. You can junk her car, and then this car actually runs. And then they accused me of ripping them off, and that was the first step when things got weird between me and my in-laws. And now it's the thing where my mother-in-law is going to be probably coming to visit Natalie next week while I'm gone, or maybe the week I'm home before Christmas. And I can't wait because, as the listeners know, the last time she came, she did nothing but sing my praises and how amazing it is that I'm a man who can change diapers and take care of the kids and cook and clean. And I'm just so amazing. Natalie's so lucky to have me. And then spoke to Natalie on the phone and said, I yell at my kids too much. And this is a woman who literally...
And not enough at his mother-in-law.
Yeah, right. Like, this is a woman who literally beat my wife with a hairbrush. Now, here's the thing. I'm not getting on a soapbox and saying that you can't hit your kid with a hairbrush. If that's what works for you and your kid, great. Am I going to do it? No. But you can't beat your kid with a hairbrush and then criticize me for raising my voice to my children when they are misbehaving. It's not like my kid's sitting there singing a song that he composed about how amazing I am, and I'm like, shut the fuck up, kid. It's not that's not what's happening. It's that, hey guys, we gotta go, and they're off in La La Land, so I go, hey, let's go. And that's what I'm doing. And oh gosh, so fucking aggravating, Tom. So aggravating.
Well, it's just knowing, like, I know the volume that knocks my kid out of his reverie of like wherever his brain is.
Yeah.
And it might not apply to everybody else, but you know, there sometimes are, yo, let's go.
Yeah.
And suddenly he wakes up and re-enters the world from wherever a four-year-old is in their head.
I got to be honest, I'm 34, and that almost made me get out of my seat. I was like, oh, we got to go?
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, let's move it.
I grabbed an oar, and I was ready to row somewhere. I don't know where I was going, but I was going to be moving when you said that to me. Well,
I've never once had to hit my child. I wasn't above it in my head before we had him, but I've never had to do it. And I found that, you know, my voice can terrify him. And I don't go extra loud, but I just get really quick and stern. And there have been times he's hidden under the table crying.
What?
And I'm like, what did you think was going to happen? He's like, I don't know. I was like, well, I've never hit you. I would never hit you. I don't think he will even understand the concept of hitting.
Yeah.
Like, well, what is that? And he goes, I don't know. I just got really scared. And there's a part of me inside that's like, good. Excellent. We're on the same page. Yeah. You know, it's, I need that, and I'm going to need that when you get older.
That's what's so weird to me is that I deal with that a lot where my 5-year-old son started doing this thing where he's like, I'm mad at you, like, just so you know. And the funny thing is that this is where I don't think I'm a very good father, but he'll say things like, I'm mad at you. And I go, what do you have to be mad at me about? Like, he goes, because you yelled at me.
Right.
And I go, but why did I yell at you? And he goes, well, because I wasn't listening. I go, yeah. I go, you don't get to be mad at me because of something you did wrong. You screwed up. When you screw up, I'm going to yell at you and get angry at you. I said, when I ask you to do something 3 times, how many times should I ask you to do something? He's like, once. And I go, exactly. I go, so you can be angry all you want, but you're wrong. So you know. And I just, in the moment, it makes perfect sense. But whenever I retell these stories to other adults, it just sounds like the stupidest shit in the world that I'm having this conversation with a 5-year-old. Like, you're wrong.
Because everyone thinks that a 5-year-old can't be logical on some level. And I think you keep telling that story, they eventually get it.
I grew up
with look with your eyes, not your mouth. And I didn't even know what it meant the first few years of my life. And then finally it dawned on me, oh, right, shut up and look for what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, so I say that to my kid, and I was like, he doesn't know what that means. And he came up to me the other day and said, Daddy, I looked with my eyes, and I found it. I'm like, right. Bang, it's done. He gets it.
It's the thing. I mean, your wife, I'm sure, is well aware. I really believe that it's the repetition. It's that you have to keep beating them with this message and hitting them again and again and again, and then in hopes that one day it'll sink in and you'll actually have a decent person. But like I talk about in my stand-up now, is that the hardest part about parenting for me is the not knowing. You don't really know if what you're doing is really working, because it's like playing craps and you roll those dice. It takes 30 years for the dice to travel across the table, hit the wall, and bounce back. And then you find out if it was right or not. Like, right. You know, you have lots of feelings and you have these moments where it's like, yep, okay, that was a win. I know I did that right. But for me, there's just a shit ton of like, I don't know for sure, but I really believe that this is the right way. But there is no like recipe or there's not a formula that you can really go by. And you could read books and then base your opinions off of that. But I don't know. But
yeah, like I said, I got a pretty easy one. He's a good kid, but everyone says how good he is. And his pre-K teacher now is shocked at me because she says he's so wonderful. I said, treat him like he's bad. She's like, what? And I said, listen, you got to treat him like he's bad, because he's going to get away with just this little bit and just that little bit and just this little bit. And then he's going to start really realizing that, well, when I'm good, I can be really bad. And then when I'm bailing him out of juvie, you're going to be 8 years down the road. So treat him like he's bad. Don't let him get away with even the little stuff.
That's the coach in you.
But he's so good on so many levels. I was like, well, on the levels he's not, bust him and bust him hard. And like, you know, we don't go nuts on the kid, but it's just like the second it happens, you're done, you know? And well, I was just, his new thing is, my brain told me to do that. And I said, well, you are your brain. So you told you to do that. So you are going to get in trouble right along with your brain.
That's awesome. It. That's awesome. I like everything about you, Tom. I got to be honest. I like the coach in you. That's what I feel like. That's a coach in you. Like, treat him like he's bad. Lean on him harder. Like, and I know that sounds like I'm making fun. Not at all. I wish to God that I was some kind of coach or something like that, because I wish then it would have given me the experience to be able to see that work on someone else other than my child. But I really like, I know that Carolla talks about it a lot, that, you know, when he was in Pop Warner football, that the idea of just having some dude in short shorts and a windbreaker screaming at you about how much of an idiot and a loser you are is a good character builder. And I think if you have sons in particular, I really do think that that kind of stuff is good. I think, like, treat him like he's bad. Don't let up on it, because then that means you could just push him that much further. And then later on, when he's out of your house, it just makes the transition and his life, I think, that much easier. That's this humble man's opinion.
Right. Well, you set your expectations, and then you have to keep pushing those expectations, because, you know, if he's the same person he was at three, then when does he ever get better at anything?
Right.
You know, we have this thing right now where he wants to wake up early. He's woken up at 5 o'clock in the morning his whole life. And I'm like, you have to be in bed at least until 7, because it just drives me crazy, unless we have to get him up for school or whatever.
Yeah.
And the new thing is, if you want to get up early, then you have to make your bed and do all the chores that you're going to do, and you're going to have to like throw your clothes in the washing machine and all that kind of stuff. And it worked. He lies in bed and does nothing because he doesn't want to do that. He's like every other kid on earth. He's lazy first.
That's awesome.
So you know, my wife has started with this, well, it's Sunday, and well, you know what, we're in a hurry. And I'm like, no, 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 this has got to happen, and it's got to happen big right now.
That's awesome.
Because you know, if we just don't keep raising the bar on him, you know, he's just going to be this happy little kid who, you know, the teachers are like, he's brilliant. He's reading above his level already, and he's really good with his letters. And I'm like, well, have you ever seen him try to get his underwear on in the morning? He ain't that good.
Because in that way, he needs a certain class for that.
Exactly. He's special, Ed. He's very special that way.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, while we're talking about expectations and things, I would be remiss, because out of curiosity, it's what I think is quite possibly the most tragic part of your story. Hearing your story where you know, the house is destroyed by a storm and you're rebuilding it and you're doing it all yourself and everything like that. We've already hinted on it a little bit with the wife in the breakfast nook. But I'm wondering, how much does your wife look at you and just look at you as a god among men? Or is it what I think it is, and that even though you've done all this stuff, you're still just a schmuck who watches too much sports?
Well, I don't watch enough sports, to be honest with you.
Okay.
But I, You know, it's funny because it's a backhanded compliment. There's never a moment where she gives me a moment to deal with things because she says, well, I have to go do this and I have to go do that. And can you be with Nicole? And on and on and on. And yet somehow I'm supposed to get things done. And I do. And I think that she just sees that as, well, you know, he gets it done. And there it is. So I'm just supposed to be the guy that can pull it off. And there's rarely a moment, you know, she'll be like, well, I had to clean the whole house. And, you know, I say, well, I had to make the whole house. You know, you didn't have time to make the bed? No, I was making the garage.
You wait, are you saying those have never happened or these are real fights that you've had?
These are conversations.
That's good. these are conversations. I like that.
We try to have conversations in the house.
Oh, that's the best. I love it. I love it. I mean, seriously, if we would have lived closer together, I think you and I would be very good friends because I get a lot of looks from my friends because, and I don't, again, I'm not bragging. I'm not saying it's the right way to go, but there would never be an instant where my wife would complain about anything that I would not say, do you see that wall over there? Because I built it. That's why you're able to see it. That's what I was so curious about. Because here's the problem with me, and I joke about, is that I told my wife, is that the minute I realized that I was making close to the same amount of money that she was making, but working like, you know, half the time, that was the worst day in her life because up until that point, there was a lot of biting my tongue because I, you know, like she was providing, she took care of things. So, you know, I can't ride her ass, but the minute I start making enough money, that's when it's like, okay, listen, things are about to change. There's a new sheriff in town. And again, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying, I still think you're better at this than me. But I just, it's how I'm wired. And I would not be able to let that down. I would not, like I've said this to my wife. I said, you know, I take care of everything. And I go, not that I'm asking for it, but the fact, hold on, we got to get that. We got a live call coming in.
Darn.
But I've said this to my wife. I go, the fact that I'm not just constantly saying, no, honey, no more blowjobs for me this week, please. I need them to stop. You know what I mean? And so when I hear a story like yours, where you're literally rebuilding a house that was destroyed by a storm, the fact that it makes me laugh even while I'm saying it. The fact that she would still treat you like a normal husband is just hilarious to me.
You can't ever get out from under it.
You can't get out from under it. Oh, it's the best. We're all living the dream.
Friends that are getting married, I was like, listen, I never want to talk bad about marriage because it's a wonderful thing. It's a great partnership. But you're never going to win, so figure out how you're going to lose.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's the funny thing about it is that as much as I joke about it, there is not a different way of living that I would choose. I love my kids. I love my wife. I love everything about my life. I just think it's funny that these things happen that are so completely irrational. Like, I'm sure that there are moms listening to the show right now or there's dads listening to the show even worse. Does that make me laugh harder? There are dads listening to the show that, you know, don't know how to change the oil in their car or change a light switch. They're like, this motherfucker here thinks he's hot shit because he rebuilt the house. If my wife hears this shit, I'll never hear the end of it.
You'll never hear the end of it anyway.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying is that I just like the idea that you literally rebuilt the house and it's still like, well, are you gonna make the bed? Are you gonna
Right.
So you're just gonna leave your socks there next to the hamper? Is that what you're gonna do?
Right. And like I said, you know, she couldn't make it here. It was just in her brain. It was just too much to come by the house. And, you know, I'd be tearing things apart and getting everything built. And she would walk in and just say, well, is that what we're doing? And I'm like, well, yeah, I've talked to you this 100 times. Like, well, I didn't think it would look like that. Like, well, then you have to come on by and see it and maybe you can make a plan. And I would just get this look that was like, I'm not going to tell you to change it, but the next time I come in here, it would really be nice if it were not like that.
Yeah, if you could.
You know, we redid the, you know, some of the stuff was just insane, you know, reinventing the wheel in 50 different ways. And it was always like, well, here, look, I ordered this vanity. Oh, look, it's a European vanity, so the studs are off center from what we're used to. Figure it out. You know, I open the thing up. It's like, well, the stud should be here, and this is from Europe. Okay, here we go.
I'm sorry that I'm laughing, but it genuinely is hilarious to me. It's like, it's just funny that, like, even in this example, because I really do look at your example as being like the perfect litmus test for what it is to be married. That it's like, it is the only way this could have, like, it makes me think, like, even fucking Sully, who landed a plane in the Hudson River and saved hundreds of lives and shit, that even right. He's got to go home and he's catching some flack from his old lady is just awesome to me. That, you know.
Am I supposed to clean this suit that you dumped in the Hudson?
Oh, are you gonna go be on Oprah? Is that what you're gonna do?
Right.
Oh gosh, that's funny stuff. Oh man. All right, well, let's wrap it up with a little moment of the week. Does that sound good to you, Tom?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. I'll play my.
You made them. You love them.
Oh my god.
And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Stitcher, the free app that handles all your podcasting needs without having to sync to your computer. Stream all your favorite podcasts right to your Droid, BlackBerry, or iPhone. Just go to thedadpodcast.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the left-hand side. It's free, people, and they give us money if you do it.
All right. My moments of the week, it's kind of in the context of what we were talking about with our sons, is with Jacob. I had one of those moments where I feel like I'm not getting through to him. And I'm like, I have these doubts that creep into my head. Like, am I being too hard on him at all? Maybe, or, and so then he said, it was funny, cause he's learned to buckle himself in. Right. He's kind of learned to buckle himself in his car seat. He's just got the booster car seat now. And so it's great because I could just open the door and he can get in and he can handle himself. So I can, you know, it makes things move smoother. And so he was going to school one morning and he was freaking out because he couldn't buckle himself in and, like, you know, getting upset. And I go, dude, just calm down. Take a breath. I said, you can't stress out about a seatbelt, man. I go, if you're stressed about a seatbelt, your life is going to be horrible. I go, you got to learn that there are certain things you can't freak out about. And this is more of me just being a bad father, like not understanding that to a five-year-old, a seatbelt is a big fucking deal and stuff. But he, and so then the next day, so then I came and picked him up at school that day. His brother had a doctor's appointment. He's got like a little bump on his neck that we had to have like an ultrasound and blah, blah, blah. And they gave him a lollipop. And I said, you can't have the lollipop till after school. So he stuck it in his little car seat pocket. And this is my two-year-old I'm talking about now. So anyway, on the way, Jacob, the older one, wants to play at school. And I said, nope, we got to go. We got to get home. And then he gets, and he like throws a fit because I won't let him, you know, play on the swing set at his school. And then we get into the car and then he sees that his little brother's got a sucker. And he's like, why don't I have a lollipop? And I go, well, because you didn't go to the doctor. And he's like, well, that's not fair. And he goes, can I have a treat when we get home? And I said, well, let's review. I go, I picked you up and you started crying because I wouldn't let you play. I go, does that seem like you deserve a treat? And he was like, no. And so he got all upset. That was what led to the I'm mad at you, you know, conversation later on. Well, then the next day, I get him into the school and it was one of those things that I'm like, thank you. We're getting into the minivan and he buckles himself in. He goes, I'm going to buckle myself in. And he goes, and if it gets hard, I'm just going to take a breath. And then I'll keep trying. And I'm like, yes, awesome. And so then we go, I pick him up from school later that day and he goes, Dad, I want to play on the swing. I said, I'm sorry, we can't. I said, but tomorrow you could stay really late. And he's like, okay, Dad. And we get in the car and then I was like, oh no, I'm sorry. When we got in the car to leave school, that's when he said he was going to buckle himself in and take a breath. And I go, oh my gosh. And I go, yes. And he looked at me funny and I go, maybe when you have kids, you'll know what it's like. But you have when you have these moments where you realize that your kid is smart and he gets it and it's working. I go, it just feels amazing. And he just glued, like his face just lit up like he was super proud of himself. So that was mine for Jack or Jacob. And with Jack, I was actually reminded of it because my wife changed her cover picture on Facebook. We went to Disneyland, and I touched on it when I did the episode with Nick, but I didn't give it its due, I guess. When we went to Disneyland, we went through Mickey's house in Toontown, and at the end they had like a little video, and Jack and my wife didn't know we were waiting to go meet Mickey. I thought they knew because I was catching up with them. So we open the door, and Jack walks into the room, and there's Mickey, and this kid's face just lit up like, holy crap. Like, and he couldn't take his eyes off of him. I'll post the picture on the Facebook page, but it was just so fucking adorable to watch him just like, it's Mickey. Like, and like he had seen a celebrity, like he was just losing his mind, and unbelievably touching and awesome. So that is it for me. Now your turn, Mr. Tom. Tom. That's hilarious. Hello?
Hey.
Hey, Tom. So you're going to laugh hysterically. I just did my entire moments of the week, and then I went, okay, your turn, Tom. And that's when I realized you were gone.
It dropped right at the end of it.
Oh, right at the end of what I was talking?
No, right at the end of the moments of the week announcement.
Oh, that's funny. That's hilarious. Well, anyway, I shared mine. I basically said that I had an argument with my son about buckling seatbelts. Not worth repeating for the listener. But anyway, your turn. Do a moment of the week for me, please, Mr. Hewitt.
Okay. Things have been kind of busy around here. So it's been a lot of pick up the boy at the end of the school day and go home, and he plays by himself and get stuff done. And then the weekends have been a little bit crazy. So this past weekend, my wife wanted to go out Christmas shopping, and she said, okay, you two stay out of trouble. And she closed the door, and my son turned and looked at me, and he said, Daddy, let's go get into trouble. You know what? Let's do it.
That's awesome.
And we didn't do anything that was awful crazy, but
you just went to a strip club.
Let's go make mess in the house. Let's go in the garage and let's whack pieces of wood with hammers and, you know, just, you know, and his whole thing was like, oh, do you think she's going to be mad about this? I was like, oh boy, I don't know. I'm going to hear it at the end of the day because I'm letting you do this. It's all going to be on my shoulder. And he's like, oh, that's great. That's great.
That's awesome.
You know, you say all the time you want your kid to have a little danger and you have that. Not, like, I want him to have that, but I also want him to get that out of his system while he's with me.
Yeah, exactly. Know? Well, it's all in good fun, you know?
Kid do this, like, why do you let your kid do the poo talk when it's just you two? It's like, because otherwise he's going to be doing it at school.
Yeah.
And he knows he does it with me at home. We do laugh. We laugh about it, whatever. Putt-putts, ha-ha, hilarious. And then the tape's off. You just have to deal.
Yeah.
So it was a great, great time because he was just giggling and laughing, and his laughter is the best thing on earth.
Oh, that is so. Yeah, it's that. I love it. Dad, let's get into trouble. Oh, that's great. Well, that was our show. You can send us an email to show@thedadpodcast.com. Throw us a like on facebook.com/dadpodcast. Follow the show on Twitter @dadpodcast, or you can follow me at Twitter @JustinWorsham. Don't forget, you can go to thedadpodcast.com, do the paid subscribership, $2 a month or $24 a year. If everybody did that listening to the show, it would actually change my life, literally. Is there anything that you would like to plug? If maybe somebody wants a lifeguard boat built for them, or they want to rebuild their own house or anything? Or
I'm going to plug you because you gave me pretty good grief about not paying for the membership before, and I don't know if we went back on the podcast, if you had been asking for money before the storm, and then during the storm, I couldn't quite afford to help you out yet. It's no money at all, folks. So get off your keister, send the guy some cash, let him do the show, and it's a whole lot better than that extra chocolate bar you're probably having at the end of the day.
That's very kind of you. And what that makes me realize too is that I've given myself like some benchmarks. So right now I have 32 paid subscribers. If I can hit 50, I think that will make it enough to where I could start doing like a live call-in episode. And then if I hit 100 paid subscribers, then I could start doing more episodes within a week. Because just right now, I make more money doing the voiceover stuff, and that eats up a chunk of my day. Where if I do a podcast in the middle of the day, it kind of kills the time I have free without the kids. And so it's hard for me to justify doing that more without having the cash flow. So I'm not hurting or anything like that. I'm no Tom Hewitt rebuilding my house. But I appreciate your kind words. And again, in closing, Tom, I can't tell you how much I appreciate what you wrote in the email and the time that we had here today. We will definitely do this again, a hoot and a half. And I hope that you get the kudos that you deserve, because what you've done for yourself and your family is nothing short of amazing in this dude's opinion. I wish that I had the balls to be able to do something like that. And I literally hope that you can walk around with your head held high and be proud of what you do, because you should be. You are a man's man, and we all should strive to be like Tom Hewitt, in my opinion.
We'll see about that.
Well, on behalf of my new friend Tom Hewitt, this is Justin Warsham saying, stay frosty.